Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
A quick warning to you younger and more sensitive listeners, much of what Eric wants to discuss today is a little on the dark side. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think it's on
all important
yes,
stuff.
It's very
but
fair to
it's
say it's very dark. It's one of the most horrific murder cases that I can remember.
Yeah.
That is in the news these days. And just to refresh everybody's memory or poison it, it has to do with Brent Christensen, the man down in
Urbana.
Urbana, who kidnapped a Chinese national who's over here, a student, mm-hmm. and he killed her in unspeakable ways. I mean, it was just, you know, it's you don't even want to think about the ways that he killed her. And they caught him using, they used surveillance with his girlfriend and so on. And I mean, they got him. But he pled not guilty. He went to trial, which was a very interesting strategy. I'll talk about that in a minute, why I think he did that. Goes to trial, and in the opening statements of the trial, his defense lawyer gets up and goes, yeah, he did it.
That is the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
It is the weirdest thing. And the theory that people had, what they were saying that they thought he was doing was that he was trying to get an extra some extra face time with the jury, because the jury is going to be the jury that sentences him. And just to back up a tiny bit, what happened was this case was tried in federal court, mm-hmm. In the federal system. Federal system still has a death penalty. Illinois outlawed it in 2011. We got rid of Governor Quinn, signed the bill, and it was a long process where we decided we don't want to have the death penalty in Illinois. But the federal system still can take a case.
Yeah.
And subject him to the death penalty. So he pleads not guilty, and the defense lawyer stands up and says, yeah, he did it. You know, he's but I mean, there wasn't even really, didn't have to offer an excuse. Basically, the idea was that he wanted just to have some time in front of the jury, so the jury would be less horrified when it came time to sentence him. Now, I don't, that explanation doesn't make any sense to me, and I'll tell you, like I said, in a minute, why I think he did that. He was convicted rather quickly by the jury. I'm surprised it took them even a couple of hours. Mm-hmm. I guess they went and sat around and said, okay, well, he pleaded guilty. We kind of have to find him guilty.
Right.
He's now facing the death penalty. The hearings for that, the sentencing hearing begins, I believe, next Monday. And it has developed in the meantime that his defense has offered through him the ability to find this young woman's body, that her body was never found. And he has basically said that he will give information about where that body is if they spare him the death penalty.
He can't do that. I mean,
he can. He can. I mean, as I said and I wrote about this, it's hardly the worst thing he's ever done.
I guess. You
know, but extorting. I mean, her parents are understandably, they're over from China. They're understandably racked with grief and anguish over this. And it's traditional in just about every tradition, faith tradition and cultural tradition, that you want to have the remains of your loved one to bury properly.
You want to put them to rest.
Put them to rest, exactly. And the idea that he has done this, he admits to doing this to this young woman, and then he decides that he's going to use this bit of leverage to bargain for his life. You know, her life was nothing to him, but he's bargaining for his life, for the body.
Can't they say okay and then not stick to it?
I don't know. You're right. Maybe just pull a double cross.
Yeah.
Hey, we double crossed you. What are you going to do about it? I think that they have to,
honor
that
it.
That has to be something that's negotiated. First of all, you don't want your justice system doing that, by the way. You don't want them like making a plea deal and then pulling it back.
I guess.
Because plea deals are what keeps the whole justice system moving. If we didn't have them, we would, trials would take up.
Whose decisions? All right, so this is a two-parter. Number one, the strange tactic of saying, yes, we want a trial, but then opening the trial by saying, yes, my client did it. But then part two is this part of it where you're bargaining to reveal where the body is.
Right.
Who is that, the lawyer that comes up with that? Who comes up with that?
I think
that?
The lawyers did come up with that. They filed a motion basically saying that they do not want the prosecutors to be able to talk about the whereabouts of the body during the sentencing hearing. Because if you're a juror, and it's come up that the body hasn't been found, if you're a juror...
So there's an axiom that where they used to say, no body, no crime. Is that still that?
No, that's not. That's not necessarily true. They can infer from circumstantial evidence and someone having vanished and so on. No, you don't have to have a body.
You don't have to produce.
It's harder, definitely harder to convict somebody.
But wasn't her blood found on something on him too, or no?
Yeah, I think they found some of her blood.
There was other evidence.
A baseball bat, maybe in his closet. Something he made quite an effort to clean up, but not enough. I think what happened here is that the defense attorneys, I think it's sort of a repellent idea that you can't at sentencing. This you know, to me tells you a lot about this man's character, that he is willing to do this even at this stage, that he is so evil. Not only did he do this terrible crime, but he's willing to turn the screws on these parents at this point to try to save his own butt. Really don't like that. The other thing that came up in this case is that his defense attorneys have argued, they argued before the trial, that this should not be a federal trial, that this is the government trying to get the death penalty by moving this case into federal court. It's not, their argument is it's not a federal crime. This is, I mean, it's a terrible thing, but killing somebody should not really be considered a federal crime. Now, it can be, obviously, Timothy McVeigh, and there are ways which you can put this together. I think their argument is they're going to trial here. They're going to let him be convicted in federal court, and then this is going to give them grounds to appeal. That if they had just pled guilty in federal court, their appeal case would be less. So that they went through the motions of this trial in order to give themselves grounds for appeal.
I have a question. Isn't the death penalty now illegal in Illinois?
Only for the state. In state court. But this is federal court, and federal court is a totally different jurisdiction.
So would they send him to another state if he gets the death penalty?
They could still try him under the state court if he is. But it doesn't really matter. He's going to get life no matter what, right? So there's no real reason for the state to go through all the motions of trying him if they need to. But this issue of joint jurisdiction actually was in front of the U.S. Supreme Court earlier this year, and it more had to do with some of these financial crimes where you get somebody on financial crimes and whether you could pull away the power of the pardon from the president. President Trump has the power to pardon people of federal crimes, but not state crimes.
Got it.
That's for governors, so that if you get like a Paul Manafort, if you get him on state charges for the same kind of things, the same tax charges and so on, then you can immunize him from being pardoned.
Eric, if you're the prosecutors in this case and you get the argument that this should be a state crime and not a federal crime, couldn't you counterbalance it and say, not only is it a federal crime, it's an international crime because this girl is from another country?
Yeah, that's the argument that they've made. And it's whether the appellate courts buy into that or not, I don't know. It seems to me like what happened was they wanted to go for the death penalty here. And I understand that. I'm an opponent of the death penalty, but my opposition has to do with the errors that come up so often with the death penalty. It doesn't have to do... I'm not one of those people who thinks like, oh, it's always wrong to kill somebody. When someone commits an act like that, and people are saying, well, if you're sure someone's guilty, well, in this case, he admits to doing this crime.
Yeah.
And there doesn't seem to be a lot of mitigating factors. Like he wasn't afraid. There was no self-defense.
Right.
He just abducted her and killed her. I don't have a problem. I don't call this for the reimposition of the death penalty. I don't have a problem with the federal government executing him.
Yeah.
I think they decided to do this. They decided to do an end run around Illinois' general prohibition against the death penalty by invoking federal law, which is very unusual. You think they could do that with any murder, really.
Yeah.
They could basically reimpose the death penalty if they had the space in the courts to do it. I think the will of the people of Illinois was expressed in abolishing the death penalty in 2011. It's still, it's the law of the state. For the federal government to come in and go around that strikes me as a bit cynical.
It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Eric Zorn. Eric comes by on Mondays, and we talk about whatever's on his mind. You wanted to chat about reparations a little bit, huh?
This is such an interesting topic, I think. The 5 years ago or so, Ta-Nehisi Coates, who was a scholar, intellectual, black intellectual, wrote a piece for the Atlantic, a very long piece talking about the case for reparations. Now, reparations is the idea that we had all these years of slavery followed by Jim Crow and segregation, and this has put black people, black population in the United States, just so far behind
right.
in so many ways. And he's talked a lot about Chicago and the real estate practices here and how, it was just not a level playing field. And people act like everything got fixed at the end of slavery or maybe with the end of the Civil Rights Act in the 60s. But in fact, this poisonous atmosphere for black people has continued for a long time, and that we owe this population reparations, some sort of way of repairing this damage.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a topic that is really, really raw for a lot of people. There are a lot of people who feel like, well, my family didn't even come over here until the 30s. They weren't part of slavery. I've always been good to black people. I've hired them or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I don't owe them anything. And I should have to pay taxes to make up for that. And the question is, who gets this idea who gets repaid in some way? And does Oprah Winfrey get a check? Does mm-hmm. LeBron James get a check? Do very successful African Americans get a check? Ben Carson, or is this something that you go into a community and have like a Marshall Plan for some of these communities like Englewood, where you need to really focus a lot of resources on them? This is a really raw debate, like I said, and it's one that makes people feel like you're trying to make me feel guilty as a white person, like, and you're trying to make me pay for things that I didn't do. And the argument that Coates makes and a lot of people make is that we need to do something. And there is often a fairly vague idea of what that something would be. But we need to do something to try to correct the wrongs of history.
Yeah.
And, yes, Native Americans or American Indians have a legitimate and severe beef about their treatment in history. The Irish and Italians and other people also have their beef. But that the situation for African Americans is almost uniquely bad, and that we really need to make some sort of an effort. My view is that writing a check to individuals, and this is, certainly some people think that you should just do that. You should, say, look, your ancestors worked for free for their entire lives, mm-hmm. and we're gonna make that up to you as though we had stolen money from them. We stole their labor from them. We're going to make that up to you individually. My argument would be, or my feeling is, that what we really need to do is redouble our efforts in some of these communities in terms of jobs, education, housing, and so on, so that you are directing these reparations resources, this repairing work that needs to be done, to those communities that remain affected by it, most affected by it. And again, when I write about this, the mail that comes in is so hostile that people really feel like they are being victimized as taxpayers by people who are demanding that they make up for something that they didn't do. And the counter argument, which I think makes a lot of sense, is that first of all, a lot of us, a lot of white people have benefited from this imbalance for a long time in ways mm-hmm. that we didn't maybe even ask for. But it really is undeniable that being born a white person in America has some advantages to it. And it doesn't mean that you're going to be a success. It doesn't mean that you're going to be rich or anything like that. But it means that your experience of life, your experience is vastly different from a lot of African Americans, and that we need to try to make up for that. And I think it's a good place to start when we're talking about this. And the idea that the legislation that's being proposed simply calls for a commission to study this, to look at what these lingering effects are and what the various ways are that we could go about addressing those that make sense, that are doable. And our editorial board has come out in favor of that. I'm in favor of that, of having that commission, having a serious conversation about this. Not to make people feel guilty about their history, or they're guilty about
just
their
white realistic.
Privilege, to use that expression that gets people's backs up. But just to talk about, we have this situation, and it's very clear. You look at the wealth gap mm-hmm. between blacks and whites. And the education gap, the opportunity gap, the unemployment gap, all these things that come into play. We need to do something about that. We need to try to bring those things together because it's bad for all of us to have a society like that. It's part of what drives a lot of the problems that infect a city like Chicago.
There was a leader in the black community, and his name escapes me. I saw it last week, either on Monday or Tuesday, who was saying essentially what you just said, which is a one-time check to people is certainly not the answer. The answer is investing in those communities and making the communities more sustainable. That's the answer.
I think that is the answer. And I think that is also a palatable answer for a lot of people. If you feel like we have disaster funds, we have disaster relief funds, we have money that we target for special problems. Mm-hmm. Affirmative action was something that certainly we've tried and still is being tried, but that only goes so far when you're still having these communities that are still struggling so hard. So I really hope that Congress at least agrees to take a look at it right now. None of the proposals, I haven't seen any specific proposals on the table. And the column that I wrote said that this word reparations implies writing a check to people, and that really gets a lot of people upset.
Sure.
And so it's like, let's pull that word off, and let's talk about looking at restoration of these communities, looking back at our history and acknowledging what has happened,
yeah.
rather than saying like we're going to write you a check, because if that, as long as that's on the table, people are going to be really upset about it, and we're not going to move this conversation
forward.
True.
So. Yeah, that's Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Read him there or listen to him with us on Mondays. Thanks, Eric.
Good to see you guys.
Thank you, Eric. Coming up, the stories that matter with Jen DeSalvo from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.